You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Winter is Coming Game of Thrones podcast. I'm your host, Razor, and I'm here with Isis, Corey Thone, and the editor-in-chief of Winter is Coming himself, Dan Selke, who you could see on Wick Live today wearing a Santa hat. Dan, that was quite the look for you. Thanks again for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Too bad we don't have Annie tonight. She's on her vacation. And Corey Thone, stable boy, is out mucking the barn again.
Thone. Corey Smith.
Corey, right? Well, yeah, Corey Thone's stable boy is Corey Smith. Okay. He's out mucking. He's out mucking the stables. Thone works him to death. So, I mean, what are you?
Not yet, but that's the goal.
That's the goal. I was gonna say, how long is this gonna take? Anyway, what we're going to talk about tonight is, this is our last podcast of 2016. We're going to take the holidays off. We'll kick it back up back the first week of January in 2017. But right now, this podcast is all about our year-end review of Game of Thrones. And we're going to talk about all the fun stuff that happened from 2016, from January, or we'll probably start in April, guys, because that's when it all kicked off, all the way till now. There's lots to talk about, and we'll get all the way through it. But first, let's just kick it right off with episode one of season six. We all knew what we were kind of expecting. We were excited for Game of Thrones to be back, and Dan, I want to ask you, when you saw episode one and the camera panned down top of black and Ghost is howling, what was your first impressions? Did you get a feel for how the season was going to go after episode one was done?
I mean, I'll be honest. When it first came on, I was nervous. I remember being nervous because season five was decent, but I think a lot of fans, me included, thought there were some cracks in the foundation there.
Absolutely.
But the last couple episodes, especially, were kind of, gave me a little pause. So honestly, I was a little worried that if it wouldn't go off the rails in season six, it might, like, I was settling in for Game of Thrones to kind of take a bit of a drop, you know, and like be one of those shows that isn't as good in the older years as it is in the early ones. Mm-hmm. And episode one didn't really, like, shocked me back to life. But by the time, I don't know, like, episode three or four rolled around, I was back on the happy train, pretty much.
Are you telling me that old naked Melisandre didn't shock you into anything?
That I love. I mean, it was great. I thought the scene was really, really good. But there was that Dorne stuff, I recall. That, to me, was like, oh, great. Such a cynic. And it's not the fact that it's Dorne. It's the fact that it was poorly handled and written. I figured, oh, okay, so we're still going to keep having poorly written stuff on this show.
Right, right, right.
I think that might have been the worst part of the season, that first dorm scene with Arya being a second place. But after that, it was uphill. And I remember just the first episode, Melisandre being naked. I remember Sansa swearing allegiance, or Bran swearing allegiance to Sansa. Mm-hmm. I remember feeling this is going to be good, but it really got me back on board. And I think turned into a really good season in the end, about, like, a fourth of the way through.
Phone, what do you think? You think season six, from that first episode on, I mean, to me, the Melisandre twist was a pretty big twist, and it was a nice way to say, hey, we're back, and we're ready to shock you. What did you think about that?
I honestly I still can't figure out why that was necessary. I know that might sound weird, but
really,
yeah. I mean, we already knew she and the Red Priest and everything. We already knew that they had magic that was real, that had kind of been a thing leading up to everything, to this situation. I guess because she was so wrong about Stannis, they needed to remind us that she was still magic. I guess I don't know, but I obviously I get with her character, like she doesn't usually sleep. So her going to sleep is a big deal anyway, and she takes off her magic necklace, which is probably kind of a tiresome thing to wear. She's just tired and old, and she maybe has lost her faith and all that kind of stuff,
which,
right?
Which to me was the point. She had lost her faith.
Yeah, no, but fine. But I didn't think they had to do all that. I don't know. I just feel like it was a big thing to do to have her faith be completely restored the next episode.
Isis, how did you feel about that big scene? And I know before you get to Melisandre, tell me how. I've asked you this several times because we all know that Jon Snow is your buttercup. But how did you feel opening that scene? Because I know in one of the podcasts you had kind of hoped that he would open his eyes and wake up in episode one. So how did you feel? Starting with Jon Snow, cold and lying frozen out there in Castle Black's yard, and then being taken up to the room, and then finally at the big twist of Melisandre. What were your thoughts about that?
Okay, I thought that it took us a while to get to, you know, Jon Snow, back to him. I mean, yes, we saw him and his body was laying there, and yes, I hoped that he was going to, you know, like his eyes would just open up, you know, some magic, I don't know, whatever. I just wanted him back immediately. And it didn't happen that way. And I was a little disappointed, but then I was like, okay, well then maybe this is going to be where Melisandre is like, look at all this. I mean, because, you know, she's talked about all this power that she has and only very few people have seen her power. One of them, being Davos, who has seen her, you know, the ghosts come out of her hoo-ha. But I think that, you know, it would have been really cool if she would have been able to do that in front of everybody, and maybe they would have probably killed her, but I would think that would have been so cool. But then, you know, then she has to go through this thing that her faith has been, you know, has questions about her faith and all this and everything. At the end of the day, I'm okay with it now because we still got Jon Snow back. If we wouldn't have gotten Jon Snow back, I would have been pretty pissed off.
Would you have quit watching the show had Jon Snow been taken out?
You know, I hate
this is a question that I've never asked you, and I know you hate, because we've talked about other shows like this before. You and I talked about Outlander, and I was like, I don't know if they do this. The whole rape scene in the prison. I told you, if I see that, I may not watch the show again. We've talked about that before. But
yeah,
taking Kit Harington out of Game of Thrones is basically taking the Iron Throne out of Game of Thrones at this point, right?
Well, no, because I still feel like I had other players that I was rooting for. And I feel, I mean, I think, granted, you know, Jon Snow is a big part of why I watch the show, because he's my beautiful cinnamon roll. But I feel like that there's still other people that I can root for in, you know, in this quest for the Game of Thrones. You know, I still have Dany out there. I will even say reluctantly Sansa. You know, I there's still people out
Brienne,
there.
Brienne, your girl Brienne.
Well, I mean, she's not going to win the throne. I don't
know, but she's going to be a badass.
Yes, but she's somebody that I care about the storyline. So it's not one of those situations where had, you know, Outlander, which I absolutely love, had done something to the storyline with the main characters, I'd have been like, I'm done watching the show, because they are the main characters. I think what Game of Thrones has done so well is that they have all these other storylines going on, that, you know, and you can have other people that you're rooting for to, you know, say, hey, well, if this person dies or if this person, something happens to them or whatever, hey, I got this other person that I'm really rooting for. You're just not hinging your bets on just one person. At least I'm not.
Right.
You know, so I think that's okay. But that's also a problem that Game of Thrones has, is that they have so many storylines going on out there that I feel like, I think season five, it was really hard to kind of invest yourself in those storylines, whereas I think season six, they did a really good job of kind of starting to bring everybody's storylines together.
And Dan, and so, let me ask Dan a question. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Dan, let me ask you this. Isis brings up a good point about season five. I think, do you think in season five is when they started the culling of characters? Stannis, Shireen, obviously his wife wasn't that much of a player in the show, but Stannis and Shireen are gone. So that's when the culling kind of started, right? And then you move into season six where everybody, you know, a lot of people die, like half the Night's Watch are gone now, and the Battle of Bastards takes place. Ramsay's gone, Roose is gone, Tommen's dead, Marcella's dead, all the Sand, well, not all the Sand Snakes, they're the ones that actually killed the other people in Dorne. So do you think this culling started towards the end of season five and just picked up in season six and just didn't stop?
No. I think in season five was kind of status quo. I mean, it did kill people, Stannis, you know, but it also added people. It added the Sand Snakes and it added Doran, which is what all the seasons had done.
The most wasted character on TV.
Yes, it is definitely true. You know, like season three, it killed Catelyn and Rob, but it added Missandei and Grey Worm. And season four added Oberyn, and it killed Joffrey. So I think season six, finally we got to a point where it's just killing people and not adding new ones. I think that's part of the reason why it felt like it had as much momentum as it did. Okay. Because there was a real shift from building the world and kind of setting things up
to now tearing it down,
setting the pins up to knocking the pins down.
Yeah.
that's part of the reason this one, it felt more propulsive than maybe any of the other seasons.
I want to ask you one more question before I move on.
Okay.
I've heard you're popular tonight. I've heard a lot of people say this, that season six was pandering to the fans. Do you feel that way?
No. And the reason I feel like that is because pandering to me means that you give them what you like, that you give the fans what they want without earning it. Like, okay, so season six, it gave them a Jon Sansa reunion. It gave them a Stark reunion. But mm-hmm. It had also put both those characters through living hell for the past five seasons. It wasn't just like they were snap, they were together. Like, they had to go through it to get to that point.
Yeah.
It killed Ramsay, but after he'd done terrible, horrible things for three seasons, it wasn't just like, he's bad and now he's dead. I think a lot of plots kind of came home this season, and they reached the point where they can start turning into something positive for the heroes. I only would say that it was pandering if it hadn't earned it. And in most cases, I think it was earned, because we had to go through the fire first, come out the other end of it.
I think we earned every great scene that was in season six was earned.
I mean, there were a couple of scenes where it messed up, but for the most part, I think you're right.
So let's, Corey Thun, I want to ask you this. I've noticed this a lot lately. And it's kind of, to me, this has happened to Game of Thrones quite a bit over the years. With more popularity, the more comparison it gets to other shows, but it really started happening in season six. I've written a lot of those articles. What do you think about shows now being compared to Game of Thrones? Is this show the next Game of Thrones? Like, I'll give you a for instance. We have Anne Rice reviving the Vampire Chronicles and wanting to make it a show like Game of Thrones with vampires. We have Sci-Fi Channel, the Sci-Fi Channel has actually upped their game with a lot of great shows now, and so they have Magicians Season 2 coming back in January, and they want to compare how they're doing things with Game of Thrones. They even have a Ned Stark line in there. And so now every new show is supposed to be Game of Thrones, and you being my my Americana TV expert, how do you feel about that?
I think that's a mistake to try to compare. Just somebody, either a viewer or, I mean, if the people that make the shows are saying, we're trying to model this after Game of Thrones, then I really feel like they're doing themselves a disservice. I mean, Game of Thrones, it certainly isn't without influence from countless TV shows and movies that have paved the way for it. I mean, hell, the books are so directly influenced by things like Tolkien and you know,
actual
fairy tales
legitimate
and stuff like
history
that.
As well, too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and actual history. Yeah, I mean, it's like everything's influenced by something else. I think that shows should look at Game of Thrones and say, let's look at how they handled this cast of this size and still kept people interested, people that maybe don't even remember the names of all the characters, even the big characters, but know the faces and know the story and they want to keep watching. I think that's important. But if you're going to tell me some show on sci-fi is the next Game of Thrones.
Oh, no. I'm just saying that's what people are saying. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Well, people are dumb.
People are dumb
again,
in
these are
general.
People that watch shows on sci-fi. So
I watch shows on sci-fi, damn you. Wow. Listen, I also want to compare this to I don't know if any of you guys have heard. I don't know if you even watched it, but I was a fan of Marco Polo on Netflix, and they've canceled it now, so there'll be no more episodes of Marco Polo. And I really enjoyed last season. It really got really good last season. They even had a holiday special about the monk, however many eyes he has.
They had a holiday special.
They did.
What'd they learn at the end of it? How to use a compass?
No, actually, the holiday special for that show was a bunch of weird looking Chewbaccas and some weird mind bending music and Harrison Ford really angry that he was there.
Creator of that show has hidden the holiday special.
Yeah, no, but it was a you know, Marco Polo was a really good show in my opinion, and that show when it came out really 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 got compared to Game of Thrones because of when it was set. The action sequences, horses, swords, knights, warriors, battle between different the politics of running a land like that. So I think that
you run into a lot of problems as a show creator, let's say, as someone who would work in the creative field, trying to make the next something. Really sounds like a studio message to me and less of what the people that created it were saying. The goal should be to make your own thing. And you know, you can wear your influences on your sleeve and everything, it's fine. But people have been saying, oh, is Westworld gonna be
I was gonna ask you about Westworld next.
Is Westworld gonna be the next Game of Thrones? And it's like, I don't understand what you mean by that, because granted, they both have horses, but other than that, there's not a lot of similarities.
And you know what? I'll say this, and then I do enjoy interrupting you, so I'm going to do it again.
Okay, cool.
In the original Westworld, there was a medieval world, and I'm so glad that is it Jonathan Nolan, I believe, is one of the writers. He said, we're not doing a medieval world, and I'm so glad he said that, because if you have a show like Westworld, who had a huge first season and is so popular right now and has got so much buzz going into its second season, which won't even show until 2018, it's dangerous to play that game. It's dangerous to say, look, we're the next Game of Thrones, especially since Game of Thrones is going to be going off the air in 2 years, and Westworld will have to be the, I don't know, the flagship, the banner carrier for HBO if they have to. But and so they avoided going to medieval world. They did show a Japan world where there were samurais and things like that. So that was pretty cool. But I don't know,
Japan,
man.
World.
That's what everybody's – Japan, what else do you want to call it? Feudal Japan world? I don't know, whatever. Anyway, so yeah, it's dangerous to compare. Ultimately, that's the lesson we're learning here. Don't compare yourself to Game of Thrones. Be your own show. And let your show be good on its own merits or bad and get canceled, right? I guess that's what we're kind of learning. Kind of like the Bastard Executioner that was on FX. Horrible show.
Horrible show.
Wasn't very good.
I didn't watch it.
And,
well, as I recall, you gave it a pretty good review when you wrote about it on Wix.
The first episode was good. The rest of it was absolutely garbage. So, moving on. Let's talk about some cool things that happened in Season 6, because there were so many twists and turns. And I want to go straight to the door. I want to talk about that big reveal and how David Benioff and Dan Weiss, this was one of the big twists. Was it three, Dan? Am I talking about, were the three twists?
Yeah.
So this
three
is,
big twists.
This is one of the three big
death,
twists.
Hodor, and then something else.
Something we don't know about yet. So, Dan, walk us through mind-bending time travel that happened in the door.
That's okay.
You're welcome, by the way.
Thank you. Well, if I describe the plot of what happened, so they were in the cave, and the Night's King was coming with his army of whites, and then the Three-Eyed Raven, because he can go into the future or the past or something, knew what was going to happen, what he had to do, so he took Bran back to Winterfell. Bran possessed... Bran possessed current Hodor. No. Bran possessed...
Young Hodor.
Current Hodor through past Hodor in the past.
There you go.
Which made some kind of link between current Hodor and past Hodor. I don't know why this is necessary.
Because it's so weird how they did that, and this is a Jack Bender episode.
See, that was the big accomplishment. It's... because. When I try to describe it, I can't. I mean, I'll admit it. Like, I try to write about it, too, and it's just, I can't quite get the logic down. But the great thing about it was, on screen, it made sense. Like, it made sense on just a level that you didn't really need to think about it that much. You just knew that when Hodor was holding the door, current Hodor, and he had that link to his past self, that's what messed him up. And
he
dies in this time, and he's born in the other time. And that's why I think that episode was so good, because the story is twisty and ridiculous and full of sci-fi time travel nonsense, but it all came together because of how well it was paced and directed. And that was the big takeaway. And of course, it had all the emotion in it too. And they managed to bundle all that up into a big package and sell it. They sold the hell out of it. And that's why I think it was so successful.
Is Bender coming back for 7 or not?
No. Although I just heard the commentary. He loves the show. I'm writing that big post for you next week.
Awesome. So I know, Corey, we can't even talk about time travel and things like that without Corey blowing a gasket. So
I'm not blowing a gasket. I'm just saying that the implications there are gigantic, and the fact that there's only 13 episodes left makes me think that they are going to not be able to explain it worth a shit. And I'm worried about that because there's going to be a huge black eye on the show.
Do you think that they didn't explain what happened with the Hodor thing effectively?
No. What they explain with Hodor is the implication is that Brandanowitz, that Bran can
you use his full name when he's in trouble, Brandon.
Brandon. So Bran, basically, he by being in the past, in the tree. Using the link in with the tree and then breaking from the link.
LinkedIn? He used LinkedIn.
If I swear to God. if you bring up Zanga, I'm going to log off. No, so he broke from the tree, but he was able to still be jacked into the past. And he did it through Hodor, I guess, or through whatever his powers could keep that link going from as he got further and further away from the tree and from everything else.
Basically, Hodor was his wireless connection.
Yeah, and so his connection, as you said, Dan, through Hodor is what mentally incapacitated young Hodor right in front of Ghost Bran. Meaning, and it looked to me like Ghost Bran could see or was being seen by Hodor, even.
Yeah, I noticed that, absolutely.
And then at the end, Hodor was no longer Hodor. He was Willis, is the implication to me as well, that like there was a loop there. And at the end, it was Willis holding the door, not Hodor. But regardless, the fact that Bran can, in fact, alter the past. But they already hinted at it when the young father and young Ned turned around. Now we've seen him change Bran. And whether it's a loop or not doesn't matter. Future Bran changed past Bran. I mean, changed past Hodor.
Right.
He did it. Mm-hmm. So the implications of that are that time is not, it either is an endless loop, so everything is predetermined and it's already happened very Vonnegut style, or that time can be altered, which is back to the future style, which is just a completely complicated thing to walk down. And of course, it's led to these theories that Bran is like Bran the Builder, or that Bran drove the Mad King crazy, or all these things, which are a lot of fun to talk about. But I mean, again, that really complicates this story.
It really does.
Though, I mean, because those are theories, but does it have to go any further down? I don't see why it has to engage with it.
Well, the thing that gets me, I guess for me going forward, now I feel like I'm taking up Isis's time to talk. I'm really sorry.
I'm going to her next, so keep talking.
Okay. is that, to me, it seems like they're setting up for, at least in my mind, for Bran to get past the wall. It's probably going to fall behind him or whatever. He's going to get to Winterfell, and they're going to have to use their forces at Winterfell, whoever they are at that point. I don't know when this actually happens, but that Bran's going to, you know, plug his aux cord into the red face tree in Winterfell, whatever it's called. And
the weirwood tree.
The weirwood tree. And use that to try to find ways in the past that they stopped the White Walkers, to try to find answers throughout history. He might alter history in the process. He might find out that he has to start a series of events that lead to him getting paralyzed and his parents dying and everything, because it's the only way that he can, that the White Walkers will be stopped. Because, you know, if Ned lives, then this happens, you know, butterfly effect. Please don't use the butterfly effect. Don't use that movie to ruin the effect, because the effect is interesting. The movie sucks. But Bran might have to witness all of history again. I don't know. But at this point, his powers of altering the past, or at least changing things, are so powerful, you have to assume it's going to come back. And wouldn't you know it, there's a wildwood tree. What are they called?
Weirwood.
Weirwood tree. Wildwood flower. Weirwood tree in his home backyard.
Right.
So I think that that's going to play a big part of it. And I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I think they're going to keep using that narrative device.
But
I mean, it does make sense. They'll try to do something because they set it all up. I also, the thought is he screwed up Hodor. Maybe he knows not to mess around with time now.
Maybe so.
Or just the fact that, you know, they did the Hodor thing very well, I thought.
It was beautiful.
If there's like maybe one more important time wobbly thing, that they can do it as well as that.
Okay, Doctor Who.
It should be okay.
Time you like me.
That is a good go-to when you're talking about this kind of crap.
It really is.
Here's what's going to happen. When this dragon hits 88 miles an hour,
to the dragon, Marty! All right, Isis, I have a question for you. Talking about Bran and his weirwood visions, we got to see some cool things like Jaime Lannister killing the Mad King and your baby boy being born in the Tower of Joy. So do you think, obviously I have an opinion, I think it was perfect, it was effective, but I haven't asked you, in all the podcasts we've talked about it, do you think it was an effective way to tell a story?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I felt the going back in time was really great. Granted, they could have talked about it, but it wouldn't have punched up that whole season like it did if they didn't show it to us. Especially, we've already established that, you know, things have been said before, like, for example, Ned Stark, you know, he did all these things, and then come to find out they really didn't happen that way. It was really great to go ahead and get a first-person perspective of what really occurred, instead of just getting, you know, backstory from so-and-so, from, you know, cousin or whatever, or, you know, Littlefinger or whatever. It was really great just to kind of see it. That way it kind of eliminated any, like, well, we don't know for that to be true or not, blah, blah, blah. No, we know it's true. We know that, you know, we know who Jon Snow, who his parents are. We know why Jaime killed the Mad King, because he was really, really mad. He was really crazy. And so I feel like it gave a great context of, you know, hey, you were in that moment with us. You know exactly what's going on, and I think it was just really necessary. Not only that, but it gave us such great actors this year, some great youth actors that
really
came
did.
On the show. Just amazing, you know, from the young Ned Stark and Ned's sister and Jaime and all of that. I mean,
Mormont was amazing.
And the other one was young Hodor.
Yeah, he knocked his scene out of the park. He had one big chance in the spotlight, and they talked about that scene forever. So,
gosh, it was the most talked about episode for, you know, well, until the next week. But I mean, it was everybody talked
for
about
a whole
it
week.
It really was, because it was just one of those heart-tugging moments. You love the little simpleton, and then for this to happen, and it all puts everything together, like, you know, this puzzle piece, for years that we've been kind of talking about it, why he's like that, and whatever the case may be. So I felt like it was a great way to kind of change up what was going on. I don't think we had seen.
We've only had one flash. We had one in season 5, is when Cersei saw Maggie the Frog, and that was the only one we had.
And that was in the first episode of the season too, because that was the, I think that was the opening part of that season. So, you know, we had opened up to there, and I think they kind of tested the waters to see, you know, how fans were going to react. And, man, did they dive full in, and it was just wonderful. Another reason why I felt like this past season, was so great, because they had done things that they really had not explored before.
Mm. Dan, the fight at the Tower of Joy, one of the better fights in the entire series?
Oh, sure. It was definitely fun. I mean, it was a good time.
Was it one of the better fights? Because we got to see, Arthur Dayne take on almost all of Ned Stark's guys by himself, pretty much, at one point. And we've seen great fights. We've seen duels and fights. We've seen Jaime and Brienne on the road to King's Landing go at each other. That was a pretty fun fight.
Oberyn and the Hound, Oberyn and
yes,
the Mountain.
Obviously the Mountain and the Viper. That was amazing. So where do you think the Tower of Joy, off the top of your head, where do you think the Tower of Joy fight ranks in the fights that we've seen? Not counting wars.
Three.
God damn it, you and Bone. I should have known better.
That's just a good thing for a list sometime. Coming soon. Top 10 one-on-one fights.
Well, I know what I'll be writing on Wick while you're gone. Anyway, so we got a lot of flashbacks this season that opened our eyes to a lot of things. We also got clues in Bran's final flashback. I think it was his final flashback of the season, to the Cache of Wildfire underneath King's Landing that we all knew was there because of Tyrion during the battle for Blackwater Bay. Let me ask you, Isis, Cersei blowing up the Great Sept of Baelor and in one fell swoop taking out all of her rivals and enemies except for Olenna because she wasn't there. Again, is this, even though the show is starting to bring everybody together and paring down characters, was this a good move? Killing everybody in one shot. You're taking out characters that people kind of hoped would be around for a while, like maybe Marjorie or Loras or whatever. Or for me personally, I wanted what's his name? Ashen Griffith. Lord Mace Tyrell. God, my mind just went blank. I wanted him around forever because I wanted him to sing me to sleep every night. But so what do you think about that? Was that an effective way to just get – I mean, obviously it was effective – but did it go over well with you?
You know, it actually did. And I'm not, by any means, of course, I'm not rooting for Cersei. I think she's a despicable woman, but she made the most out of an opportunity. And it was very, very Cersei-like. So, yeah, absolutely. It made sense for the storyline. And I'm a Marjorie fan. So, you know, to see Marjorie go, I hated seeing. But it really did make sense to tighten up the storyline to get things moving on. I was totally on board with it. So, yeah, I think it made total sense. But, yeah, I can see where you wanted to have Loras's storyline fleshed out a little bit more like it was in the books, where you didn't get that. So, you know, I understand that you didn't get that. That, you know, feeling of gratification to kind of get him back to where he was before, or at least to a point where he was in the books. But I think for the storyline, I think it makes total sense for Cersei to go ahead and do that. It tightens up the storyline. It starts basically kind of moving things ahead because this is going to prompt Marjorie's mother, a grandmother, to go ahead and create an alliance with the Sand Snakes and Dorne and everything like that. So I absolutely thought it was probably the perfect time to go ahead and do that especially since we're having such abbreviated seasons for the next two seasons.
And that such an amazing episode all through.
From top to bottom, the music.
Yeah, the music.
Oh, man, I still get chills thinking about it, about the music, about the weight of the whole episode, because you knew some heavy things were going to happen, and there wasn't a whole lot of dialogue going on. You know, I mean, I guess when they were in the sept, there was dialogue.
Even then, it was abbreviated. It was just basically getting through things.
It was just they let the acting, you know, do the talking and the music and everything just kind of create this weight, you know, of anxiety on your back that you just were wanting more and more and more, and it was just absolutely spectacular.
Dan, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What were you going to finish?
Oh, no, I was just going to say the music was absolutely crazy.
I still put that on sometimes when I'm writing just to listen to it. It helps. It's really that beautiful piece of music. Dan, we saw Daenerys trick a bunch of calls this season in season six and then walk unscathed out of a fire. And now we know that she is completely impervious to flame. Anyway, this comes back. That comes back around in the final two seasons, maybe, you know, that stupid leak that says, you know, one of her dragons gets switched sides to the Night King. Maybe this show something that could be happening in the future? Are we talking Dany's impervious to fire, so maybe she's the ultimate weapon against everybody? I don't know. But that scene was so powerful. Do you think that we'll get anything else like that again from her?
I'd be disappointed if they use the fire thing again, honestly.
Okay.
I thought it was a good scene. I thought the burning couch was a good scene. I think that's the last time they can get away with it. Season 6 for me, for Daenerys, played like Daenerys' greatest hits.
It was,
you know, the bring down the calls recalled the sack of Astapor when she killed all the slavers.
Mm-hmm.
It recalled when she walked out of the fire in season 1 because she was unburned. And then her big season episode 6 finish where she was on the dragon and gave the big speech, recalled Drogo's big speech back in season 1. You know, going to Meereen and fucking it up, recalled the sack of Astapor. So it was like every cool thing shown in Essos was being referenced and repeated. I hope that she gives us some new notes in the final couple of seasons.
Corey Thone, do you think we're able to get that from this character? New notes from Daenerys? It seems like a lot of the complaints coming from fans is that she's a one-trick pony. Like, she only has one monotone voice, one facial expression, and her story is basically, I'm the rightful queen, get out of my way, I have dragons. You think we'll get a little bit more in-depth character in season 7? And if they don't, is it a mistake?
Oh boy. So I hope we get more from her, but I am not confident that we do. I think there is an interesting dynamic that's waiting to unfold between her and Jon Snow about, not only is he a Targaryen, that's a whole different thing.
Right.
But just his kind of populist rise to power from being a bastard to being king of the North. And I think when they meet, she's going to probably have some respect for him, at least in that regard. Plus, as Isis will verify, he's handsome. So, but I just... She hasn't shown more than that. Like, I'm not gonna lie. I don't understand the nominations for her for a lot of things. I think that some of her biggest moments and speeches have been cheesy, almost cringy in their just delivery.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I honestly think that she is a good actress for the stage, but I do not see her becoming a movie person. Really?
Wow.
And I don't think she's been knocking out of the park in Game of Thrones ever.
I think I think of all of them, she is the biggest, most successful movie star to date.
Yeah. She is. She's
sure. In what?
In Me Before You, in Star Wars.
Terminator.
I mean, she's the one who actually has movie hits.
She's going to be in Han Solo film. Yeah.
See, that doesn't make me even more excited for the Han Solo movie. But and Terminator was an epic failure.
Yeah, it was trash.
Me Before You is like, you know, a lighter thing. So she's sure. actually someone who actually has had hits, though, I'm saying. Like, Jon sure. Snow has had no hits.
No.
No,
and I don't know if any of the people on Game of Thrones are necessarily going to become the next big action star or something like that. Like,
I don't either, but honestly, I think she might have the best chance.
Well, I mean, obviously,
yeah, because she's hot, but like, I mean, honestly, I haven't seen Me Before You, but and obviously I haven't seen the Han Solo thing yet, but I don't get it. I'm just saying I don't get it.
Well, you know,
I'm gonna side with Thone here. And I actually agree with him, and I love Danny. Everybody knows I'm down with Danny, but I'm going to agree with him that Cersei, as far as the actress that plays her, is so much better. Like it's on a different level. Like you look at her and you actually like you kind of go, oh, you know, if I met her in a grocery store, you know, just doing my shopping and shit, she would probably scare the shit out of me. Now, Danny, on the other hand, I would be like, hey, let's take a selfie. And the girl who plays Cersei, I would probably, like, you know, go on another aisle or something because she would probably freak me out. Even though I know she's not real and you know, it's a character.
Lena, but to be fair, though, Lena Headey has way more experience than Emilia Clarke.
And I think Emilia Clarke will benefit from not being cast in giant blockbusters, which apparently is not happening. She'll benefit more from doing movies like the one Dan referenced. It was a lighter fare. I mean, you can't just jump into
romantic comedy.
Yeah, well, I mean,
how much time about Me Before You? I never thought I would discuss Me Before You this month.
I don't even know what the movie is. I can't speak to it at all.
All I know is that there's a guy in a wheelchair and she's supposed to be taking care of him. That's all I know. But I think, I don't know, whatever.
Anyway, and it's a chick flick. I mean, let's just be honest. It's a chick flick, and maybe they're trying to line her up to be, a new sweetheart, movie sweetheart, or whatever the case may be.
She's the killer Julia Roberts.
Yes, there you go. She's the next Julia Roberts. But I just feel like that, you know, when you go ahead and you're looking at nominations for Golden Globes and all these other things that are coming out, and you have Leanna and you have her side by side, I'm going to go ahead and go with Leanna every day.
Lena?
Lena.
You say Leanna, I keep thinking of Leanna Mormont. I'm like, okay, yeah, no, I agree 100%.
Lena, sorry.
No,
yeah. And I've had a couple of drinks.
Shocker.
Go ahead.
Shocker.
Yeah, shocker. So I just feel like, you know, I agree with Thone there. It just makes no sense to kind of put her in, you know, beside.
Well, and I'll say this too, Isis. I think earlier in the show, in seasons 1, 2, 3, that era, it hadn't become her almost expected shtick yet. And I think she did a great job in those first few seasons of playing that character of the rise from being the downtrodden sister, however you want to describe it, to that prick, to where she became by, you know, the end of season 3 or so, where I can't really remember what season it was, where she kind of hit that first Drago. Big peak. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, post Drago, like post Drago, I mean, all that was a good build, and she did, but since then she has been stagnant to me as a character, and I think part of it is her delivery and her style of acting, but that doesn't mean she won't work in other stuff.
I think her problem on the show, and Dan as a book reader, I think it's Meereen. When they got to Meereen, she became her character from the books, and she set and ruled a city that she had no business sitting in and ruling. So it became extremely boring, her storyline, and that's where a lot of the complaints from fans were like, why do I even care about Meereen scenes? Because they're so boring. They killed off Ser Barristan. I hate this show now. I hate Dany. like these are the kind of things that people were saying. And to me, last season, I actually enjoyed some of her speeches. Like, I think Emilia Clarke delivers that Dothraki speech, the guttural language, very well. And, you know, it can get the blood pumping the way she like, she could be a good speaker to me. You know, maybe if she was a leader of a military, I don't know, whatever. But she's, I think she's criminally, I don't know the word I'm looking for.
Criminally.
Criminally cast.
Y'all going to jail.
People talk a lot of trash about her, and I think it's really, and I get what you guys are saying, and I completely understand what you're saying, Thone. I just think that Mia Clark has delivered the big speeches that she needed to deliver quite well. Think of the broken wheel speech. I thought that was a great speech in season 5 when she met Tyrion. And then, of course, now that you have season 6 where Drogon's now her basically her mount. She's flying him around everywhere, and she gets the Dothraki all charged up. I know a lot of people thought that was a cheesy scene, but I enjoyed it. And then, of course, you know, in the Battle of the Bastards, whenever at the beginning of the Battle of the Bastards, when we were in Meereen, and she's talking to the masters, and she's, oh, this isn't a discussion. You're supposed to be surrendering to me. I thought that was delivered quite well, but I can see where we're all split on her.
If I can weigh in, just people have. I'm more with you, David. I am. I think she's a good actress. I think the best thing she does is give speeches in foreign languages. I do agree, though, that her
thing,
character,
but, yes.
But like that's her specialty. Like, that her character has been stagnant for a while. And I think where the hope that she'll hit new notes is coming from is she's going into a new circumstance. Like, she was Maida Marine. It's over. She's going to a new part of the story, and that gives me hope she could sound new notes. I think acting-wise, she's more than capable of that. I just think, can the story go there? And I have hope, now that they're moving it along, and she's doing this thing we've been waiting for her to do for a long time, it will have new notes.
And think of the possibilities of her acting with the other characters from Game of Thrones that she hasn't done. In the entire series, she's not mingled with the people in Westeros. So it's going to be an amazing thing to see.
And I hope she lives up to it. I think one new note they're probably going to explore is the notion of her being crazy or
the
touches of her dad.
The Mad Queen theory.
And I hope she can knock it out of the park. And
I do too. I think if they're going to go Mad Queen, go full Mad Queen. Let her burn everybody. I don't care. It wouldn't bother me one bit. But if she's not going to do it, I don't want to see a wishy-washy like, oh no, should I do it or should I not? Oh no, Tyrion made me feel bad. I'm not going to do it anymore. But then I'm going to lose my temper and I'm going to go ahead and do it. Like, I don't want the wishy-washy crap. I either want her to go full Mad Queen or to be a wise and gentle ruler with Tyrion, listening to Tyrion's advice. That's what I want, basically.
We'll see.
Isis, you brought up a point I wanted to touch on when you were talking. Award ceremonies. And I'm going to go to each one of you, and I want to ask you, who do you think out of the cast was was robbed the most by either not being nominated or not winning their award? And I'll start. We talked about it. I talked about it a little bit today when I was writing the piece for Wick. Alfie Allen for Theon Greyjoy, just I don't understand how you can't give that guy an award for what he did last season, and even a little bit in season 5. But he's always had great range. His facial expressions, his acting, the way he does, the way he gets into his part. If he's angry, he's got all these range of emotions that he does a great job with. And then, of course, my personal favorite, and I'm probably gonna butcher his name, Ian Rion. Anyway,
it's really hard.
You don't get to pick two.
I can pick two because this is my podcast. God damn it!
You literally took my two.
Well, you can still give me your reasons why you think they bad.
No, you finish your rambling.
Anyway,
sentence.
Ramsay Bolton in season 6 was the perfect villain. They didn't even have to show him that much at all. He was only in a few scenes, and the scenes he was in, the spotlight was firmly on him, and no one was able to take it away. Even when he was with his father, Roose Bolton, when he killed him, you know, Roose was a popular character, and Ramsay killed him, and the whole time, all eyes and all ears were on Ramsay and what he was going to do and what he was going to say. From the first time we see him in the season with, what's her name, the body of his girlfriend, and he's like, feed her to the dogs. That's still good meat. And then, you know, taunting Jon Snow at
Jenny Pool.
No, you're thinking of Jane Poole. What was her name, Dan? What's it?
Oh, Miranda.
Was it Miranda? Okay. Was
yeah,
it Miranda?
But spelled Samantha. Stupid.
Yeah.
Spelled stupid.
Carrie. Spelled with like three Y's.
Yeah. But so he had so many great scenes. And then, like I said, at the parlay, taunting Jon Snow, only referring to him as a bastard. And then, although it was sad that Rickon died, the fact that he was no-look shooting his arrows was just classic villain badassery from Ramsay. And as much as of a dick as he was as a character, I'm going to miss him. And I feel like he was robbed of not even getting nominated. So, Corey, since you and I have the same ones, I'll let you stew on it for a minute. Isis, who do you think got robbed?
I'm going to say Bella. Bella Ramsey for me. Oh. Lyanna Mormont, I thought, brought such a, for me, and I'm just speaking for myself, when she came on the screen, I was excited. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, what is she going to do? What is she going to say? What is she going to, like, what's her face going to do? Because she just had a way of, like, completely dismissing you with just a look. And I absolutely was here for it. And so I really felt like she should have gotten some kind of nod as far as like a guest star nod or something like that. She did not. And then I'm going to do two. Can I do two?
Yes.
Am I going to get
do
killed?
It. Do it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. I cannot remember his name now. It just blinked. I had his name on there. Oh, my gosh. Deadwood. Shit.
Ian McShane.
Ian McShane. Ian McShane did not get nominated for guest star.
Yeah.
And that's one that legitimately was a guest star, so that was a good one.
Yes, he was. He was on one or two episodes, I guess.
One.
Two episodes.
Just the one.
It was just the
just
one.
One?
Okay. So he lived and died in one episode. And I absolutely love, like, his delivery, and which is his thing. I mean, there's very few people who can give a monologue that is fucking outstanding like he can.
Not currently, no.
And he delivers it just perfect, just absolutely perfect. And he came and he did what he needed to do, and then he was gone. And I felt like he was kind of, you know, him not getting the nod was kind of messed up. If anybody should have gotten a nod, I think he should have, and he didn't. But I would have liked to see Lyanna Mormont get a little bit of love, even if it was like People's Choice or something. I mean, I think, you know, saying that, okay, you know, she get her a Golden Globe or whatever the case, that's a little bit much. But as far as like People's Choice Awards, I don't know of many people who talked about a new character on the show as much as she was talked about.
Dan, you edited all of our posts. You still do. Wasn't she she was probably the most talked about character of the season, right?
Oh, sure, the breakout star, no doubt. It was Septa Unella last year, which was the breakout star, and this year is Lyanna Mormont.
Right.
Or the angry shame nun.
Nurse Ratched nun. Yeah. So, Dan, who do you think got robbed out of season 6?
All right. I listen to this podcast every week.
Oh, you so poor bastard.
Why?
I know.
He has to.
I have to. I have to make sure you don't say anything horrible that I have to warn the readers about. And sometimes I have to edit things. So I know this is going to be a bit of a controversial statement, but I'm just going to say it. I think Sophie Turner should have been more acknowledged by some awards body. If Maisie Williams is always nominated, I think Sophie Turner I would have rather Sophie Turner been nominated. I think she has been doing good work for a long time, and I thought she added a lot of new notes to Sansa this year. She perfected the go on, get a girl cold stank face this year. Used that in a lot of good scenes. I loved her in the scene in the Winterfell Ramparts with Jon. I loved her in the argument she had during the Battle of the Bastards. She said, I'm not going back there alive. I thought she played the naked emotion of meeting Jon again well in the fourth episode. Mm-hmm. I thought she's grown to a point where she's learning to convey a lot of what's going on inside her mind. But because Sansa's been so put upon throughout the past 5 years, it's all happening inside. She doesn't say what she means anymore, even less than she does. And I think she's gotten very, very good at that. I thought she did really good work this year. I wish she would have nominated.
Let me ask you this. Best Sophie Turner scene? Was it her walking away from Ramsay being eaten by the dogs and that coy smile?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely the most mic-dropping moment. By the way, again, I'm listening to these commentaries now. When she rides away, it's not Sophie Turner. It's not even a person. It is a CGI horse on a person.
That's funny. So she had two mic drops that episode. One was, "You're going to die tomorrow, Lord Bolton." And the other one was, as he's being eaten by his dog, she's walking away. And they said it took several takes to get her to get the right, just the right smile. But when she did it, they knew exactly that that was the one that we were going to use. So, yeah, I get it. Sophie Turner has stepped up her game, and she has the problem of playing a character that is not well-loved within the fandom. In fact, almost near hatred for Sansa with many people, because...
I think that's true. I think there's near hatred on this podcast for Sansa.
Well, I
I'm not sure if that's true of the fandom at all.
Go through the pages of Reddit. You'll see it. It's because it's and basically it comes from a lot of book readers, and some shonlies don't like her either, but a lot of book readers don't like her because of the character, not because of Sophie Turner, but because of Sansa, because they feel like it's all her fault. Everything that's happened to the Starks, everything
is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous to a point, but she did rat her dad out. She ratted him out to Cersei, but he was stupid anyway. It was Ned Stark's fault for staying. But
there are a ton of people who contributed to that.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Point out any one of them and say that it's their fault.
Sansa is the Herc of, you know, Herc from The Wire. Sansa is that in Game of Thrones. It's not her fault, but she didn't help shit. But I will say this, I agree that this last season, Sophie Turner stepped her game up, and I did two things, Dan. One, I think next season she does get nominated, probably, because I think this season, well, you know what, I say that, but didn't Andy say this next season won't be eligible for any type of Emmys or anything?
And it will be, just not next year's Emmys. It'll be eligible for the Emmys after.
Okay. I think this next season, I think that it's going to be a Sophie-heavy season. She's going to make some moves. Going to have
I can see that.
Stuff. And I think, because here's the thing, I think Maisie was nominated because her story arc, which took three seasons, basically, of her running in the wilderness and everything, kind of came to a head. And she did a great job of growing with that character and turning Arya into something pretty special, even though some of the stuff she had to do was dumb. And I think Sophie's going to be in that same boat. But second follow-up question, there were three women from Game of Thrones nominated for Outstanding Supporting Actress last season. Which one would you take off and put Sophie Turner up there for?
Instead of Williams.
Really? Because I would do Emilia Clarke.
Oh, yeah. I forgot she was there.
Oh, did you name it?
One of them would be okay, I guess.
I agree with what you're saying. I think that you could take both of them off, and if they would just put Sophie Turner and Lena Headey, I'd have been fine with it.
So the thing is, everybody loves Maisie Williams because she's a bright personality in real life.
Well, I think she's great. I don't want to make the impression that I don't.
No, I know. I understand that. No, I get it. What I'm trying to say is this. Here's the thing about Maisie Williams. They could have taken Arya's storyline in Braavos and done it in about four episodes in season four or five. So that's
well, can I chime in here real quick?
Yeah.
So this is my impression of it. Okay, I will agree with everybody that Sophie Turner did an amazing job last season. She really brought it home as far as, you know, those emotional moments. I feel like when Maisie Williams and Sophie Turner both started on the show, even though they were both new actors, Sophie Turner was at a big disadvantage as far as her acting ability. Not saying that she's a bad actress, but when she was playing side by side by someone like Maisie Williams, you could really see very big contrast of their acting ability. And then, you know, you kind of see how Maisie Williams, you know, she just kept on going and kept on going, and her storyline got very interesting, whereas Sansa was just like, it was doom and gloom. Like, you were like, oh, God, you know, what else is going to happen to this girl? I really don't even want to see her on the screen because something bad's going to happen to her.
I would literally cringe every time I came to a Sansa scene. Here we go.
Because you were just like, it was just horrible. It was always something horribly bad was going to happen. And then Sophie Turner started taking some movie roles, doing some TV work and everything. And I feel like her acting ability has just grown, and it's at the level of, you know, Maisie Williams and the girl who plays Mormont and Theon. I mean, it's just getting better and better and better. But I feel like when she started the show, she was, you know, first of all, she was had a character who didn't have very many redeeming qualities, and then her acting ability just wasn't, you know, up to par. And that's no fault of her own.
Well, think about this. Think about what Sophie Turner's had to go through in 6 seasons. Not her character, but her as an actress. Okay, she started off playing second fiddle to her siblings at Winterfell, and then she had to play second fiddle to Jack Gleeson, Joffrey, and then after that, it was, you know, she had to play second fiddle to Marjorie Tyrell, what's her name? Anyway, she had to play second fiddle to her. She and Lena Headey. She was always around bigger actors who had the spotlight on them. And so she really didn't get a lot of credit, because how can you shine when you're playing right next to Peter Dinklage as his, you know, his bride? So, I mean, there were so many scenes that happened from 1 to 6. I'd say 6 where she broke out. So 1 to 5 where she was right next to a better actor that was leaps and bounds better than she was. Think about her time with Littlefinger. Every time Aidan Gillen's on the scene, am I pronouncing that right? Is it Aidan Gillen?
Maybe.
I think so. I hope I am. every time he's on the screen, I pay attention because I want to hear what Littlefinger has to say. You know, here comes the smart guy. Here comes the master manipulator.
And, I feel like it's kind of sexist.
Well, and I was getting to my point, my sexist point, I guess, is that Sansa learned from him. And that's what I want to see in season 7, is how much did she actually learn from Peter Baelish? Did she learn to play the game? Or is she still going to be that silly little girl? And that's what I want to find out in season 7. But let's move off of Sophie Turner. Phone, did you ever get any other characters that are actors that you wanted to talk about that you thought were robbed?
Rory McCann.
Rory McCann. Okay. Best story?
I think. And the thing is, I know he wasn't in the show enough this last season to be nominated. It's really more about the season where he rode around with Maisie Williams.
Oh, of course.
And then ended up getting his ass kicked by Brienne. I thought that season, him and first off, working with talented actors is what makes actors better. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think one of the biggest reasons that Maisie Williams' character has developed like it has, and also her as an actor, is because she's worked with someone like Rory McCann, who they played off each other so well, with such an insanely awesome dynamic that if you'd have told me in season 1 or 2, hey, you know, Arya and the Hound are going to ride around for a whole season and it's going to be amazing, you're going to wish for a spinoff, you know, called like Tiny and the Wolfhound or something, and they solve crimes in like San Francisco. But like
any chicken.
Any chickens, yeah.
But they run a bed and breakfast.
They run a prisoners, but there's but yeah, I truly, that season he was robbed of a best supporting actor nomination, I think, because he really carried those scenes and helped make her character so good, while also adding so much depth to the Hound, a character that was so very shallow up until that season. He really was the guy scared of fire that's a giant. Like, we had seen him do awesome things. He was a great fighter. He had the great scene on the beach with the fire coming at him and everything and him running away. But, like, that, seriously, it wasn't that deep of a character. It changed everything to where we were legitimately sad to see him go, thinking that he died at the bottom of that ridge or whatever. And, you know, that final scene with him and Arya was great. I think that season he was robbed of a nomination.
And there were so many great lines from that season from her. And
every episode, those like two had a back and forth that was
like,
worthy
really
of
it. It's really amazing, too, because like it in abstract, it's just not a lot happens with those scenes, those people. Really. Like, almost nothing. It's just them. Like, if that's the kind of thing that could be really boring and really awful if not done that charismatically. Like,
hello, Dorne.
Hello,
exactly. Well, like, it's just them, because nothing happens. It's like the plot doesn't move forward. It's just them.
And I think that it, I mean, honestly, Dorne, more happened in Dorne than happened with Arya and the Hound, but more story was told with Arya and the Hound than happened in Dorne, and it was told better.
Absolutely. And like I said, some of the lines from each episode they were in, like, the fuck's a Lomi, that was a great one. And then the whole back and forth about naming the sword. I can't repeat the word they said there, but only so-and-so's named their sword. And then, you know, and then when he's in the bar and he's eating chickens and he's like, if you don't shut your mouth, I'm going to eat every fucking chicken in this room. I mean, and then him taking her to the bloody gates where in the Vale, and she just starts laughing. That's one, that is absolutely, out of the entire series, one of my favorite scenes, because it's so, like, it feels organic. It's so awesome. And you're right. I think that her playing beside Arya, Maisie Williams playing next to Rory McCann absolutely made her better. And as far as season six goes, Rory McCann had some great scenes because, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, like, and
but he wasn't in it enough to get wasn't in it enough to get a nomination for a supporting actor, and he was more than a guest actor, so I'm kind of a cop out. But since you took two, I'm gonna pick someone from the season before.
Well, you got your revenge. Good job, good sir. So let's all go around real quick. Let's close out season six. Dan, if you had to pick out of the 10 episodes, which one was your favorite episode? And it has to be, it can't be like, maybe this. It has to be one episode that stood out to you. Has to be your favorite episode of the season.
No, it's fine. It's The Winds of Winter, the finale.
Easy pick, yes, obviously. Yeah. Okay, why?
Because a ton of plots kind of reach their zenith, their climax. And I thought a lot of them were just depicted extremely well. I mean, we've already gone over it, but that septic explosion scene, 20 minutes, not a lot of dialogue, carried by music, carried by acting, carried by editing. Not only a really smart thing to do for the plot, like genuinely surprising, and a way to clear the board of characters, but also put together, it's not enough to just have it be written like a fun twist. The fact that they put it together so well and edited it so to be so impactful, it raises it from the level of that's good to that's great. And right. Then and that I love that it opened the episode. Because to me that was saying, you watch Battle of the Bastards, you don't think we can do any better, we're going to do better immediately. And now the rest is just gravy.
Yeah.
And we also had, you know, big jump moments like Daenerys leaving for Westeros, finding out that
three
Jon
dragons
Snow
together
is,
again.
I mean, again, and that's a cheesy moment. We all knew it was coming. But you know what? When it's at the end of that episode, it kind of works. It's just going to go with it.
Yeah.
You had finding out Jon Snow's parentage. Mm-hmm. You had the King of the North election scene. Want to call it that?
Oh, man, the cut.
Even the smaller stuff, like the Hand of the Queen pin when Daenerys.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Crowns him Hand of the Queen or whatever. Just a lot of moments they're building to, in some cases, for years, were there, and they were strung together in an elegant way. And I thought it was a terrific hour and 15 or so minutes.
What about you, Isis? What was your favorite episode of the season?
I agree with Dan. I mean, granted, of course, I loved watching my beautiful cinnamon roll come back to life completely naked. Completely naked.
With a loincloth covering his genitals.
Well, I didn't. I just saw his hiney, and that gave me life. That breathed life into me too. But I agree with Dan. I mean, that the last episode, you know, you watch Battle of the Bastards, and you're like, wow, this is epic. You know, they did so many. You know, hit all the right notes.
How will they ever top this?
How are they going to top this? And they did at the very beginning. And it's funny because I remember watching, after the whole scene happens in, with the bombing, I guess you can call it. And you kind of like sigh and you're like, okay, what now? What are they going to do now? We just started the episode. What are they going to do now? And I felt like it really just did an incredible job that, you know, it was one of those things that, you can kind of go and say, okay, yes, I know that we're not going to get another episode for a long time. I know that we're going to have an abbreviated season, a half a season, if you will. But I'm okay with it because I've got this. I have this that I can chew on. And some little piece of news that just came out, and I know that it's on Winter is Coming and it's also on Culturist, that they're going to have during Christmas a whole marathon,
yeah.
Game of Thrones marathon. So you can go ahead and relive the magic, if you will, of all the episodes of Game of Thrones, especially that last episode that we got to kind of tie you over, you know, during Christmas time and everything. But I feel like that was one of those episodes that you kind of, you don't forget about. You don't, like, I can kind of, oh, yeah, that happened. You know, yeah, I saw, what's her name, naked and blah, blah, blah. But it's not one that I can. For me, it's not ingrained in my head, and I'm okay with it. But man, that last episode, I you know what? I'm probably gonna watch the episode again tonight.
I've watched it several times, and it never gets old. Bone, your favorite episode?
Well, since they both said the finale, I'm not gonna say that. Although it is the best episode because it ended with Danny on a boat.
I'm on a boat.
Oh, motherfucker.
It's just like
she her flippity flops.
I literally, like, I wasn't making a reference to Lonely Island there. I was just like, we've had six seasons of her being like, you know, I'm gonna get a boat, and then she finally got a boat. And it's like I need to buy a boat cat for six seasons, and then she finally gets a damn boat.
Let me cut in here. I remember our first of the season podcast of season six when they burned the fleet at Marine, and you just losing your shit.
I lost my mind. I was just like, son of a bitch. They are never going to get on a boat. This show will end with her, like, looking around me like, we don't have any trees. How do I build a boat? Can you build boats out of gravy? No. And then, like, just the dumbest. I was so happy that she was on a boat. So I'm going to change mine and not give the obvious one of the Battle of the Bastards, which was actually technically almost a flawless episode, I think. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say the door, because the door was the type of episode that you don't expect. And what was it, episode four?
Yeah, or five.
You really don't expect something like that in the middle of a season, and you also don't expect it to, because something like a reveal like that, an episode like that that hits you in the gut the way that the door did, you expect the next episode to either not exist, have that be the finale, or to have a massive drop off, and there wasn't, because of this is a great job crafting this season's story arc. But man, that episode had one of the most gut-wrenching, if not the most gut-wrenching moments in the show's season. And that's saying a lot. And I don't even know what else happened in that episode. I know reading the recap for it, being like, man, so much happened in this episode, but nothing will top that season. In season six, nothing was as, I don't know the right word for it, than Hodor's death and by sacrifice. And isn't that where we, I don't guess, did we meet Benjen in that episode, or was it the beginning of the next episode?
It was the start of the next one.
I thought it was important, and because I'm not a book reader, but how the whites were created, you know, that we found that out.
Oh, yeah, the White Walkers being created by Obsidian.
Yes.
Yeah. I also loved the play in Braavos that Arya watched there. I mean,
oh, man.
Obviously, the Hodor stuff was the best stuff, but I liked it.
Yeah.
Even if you took that out, there's still quite a lot of good stuff in that episode.
Well, and we talked about how important that play within a show was several times in the season, but it serves. Do you guys watch Westworld? Did everybody watch that?
Obviously. Yes, I did.
Okay. Did everybody else watch it?
I'm four episodes in.
Okay.
I'm three episodes in.
Okay, that's fine, because you all remember them playing like Black Hole Sun on that saloon piano, right? Mm-hmm. That's their, really, and Jonathan Nolan has talked about this, to remind you that they're in a park, right? Just so you as a viewer don't forget, this is a theme park, right? So that play was a great, within the show, was a great reminder that, hey, you get to see all these third-person omniscient things happening. Like, you're being told the story from a view that no one else is. Everyone else in the world thinks that Tyrion's a piece of shit and that Joffrey was a great king that was murdered by his shitty uncle, and that Ned Stark was a traitor, and all these things. And it really, not just for Arya, because it was enlightening for her to be reminded of those things. obviously because it drove her away from the House of Black and White Market. But there was it was important for us as viewers, I think, to be reminded that you're being told this story from a different angle than everyone else. And, you know, whenever this season comes up and it's Jon Snow and it's, you know, Dany and all these people, they're going to be going up against someone in Lena Headey's character in Cersei that people actually sympathize with. So remember that.
I think for me, season six was one of those seasons. And Dan, you and I talked about this in our chat, how it started off with a punch with the Melisandre twist, and then you had episode two, Home, where we see a flashback and we see all the, you know, there's some cool things there. And then Oathbreaker, it was another 1-2 punch with the Tower of Joy. And then in Book of the Stranger, Stark reunion. And then of course the full on just knock you out. The door was the one. It's like we kept wondering. Remember, we kept talking during the season, when is this going to stop? How much are they going to keep hitting us in the gut with every episode? And then it happened in like episode 6 and 7. You know, kind of, it was like one of those setups. We're going to set everybody up, get them ready for episode 9, the Battle of the Bastards, which I'll go ahead and choose the Battle of the Bastards as my favorite one. Because I had been looking forward to Jon Snow to take a quote from Isis to wreck some dicks. And he did. He got out there, and obviously the old Stark, or Targaryen, if you want to call it, anger gene popped up, and he was goaded by Ramsay, and he ran out there on the battlefield to try to save Rickon. And of course, that probably caused thousands of his own men to die because they came to save him. But that episode was so amazing because as you're watching Jon Snow fall to the bottom of that pile of bodies, for me, I started to have a panic attack. I felt like I could not breathe at one point. And then you're watching the after show where Kit Harington is saying, and Sapo, the guy who directed it, Miguel Sapo, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I call him Sapo.
Sapochnik.
He talks about they actually put Kit Harington through all of that. And then you see how those horses weren't CGI. They actually were on a track that came right, you know, they had a path that ran right at Kit Harington. And this is the episode that Kit Harington really should have been won every award there ever was for. Because the way he acted his way through the battle, his action scenes, from being under the pile of men and almost suffocating, to coming out of that, to chasing Ramsay down to Winterfell and watching 1-1 die, and then to beam the shit out of Ramsay and then stopping when he realizes that Sansa's there and it's not his kill. Ramsay was not his kill. It was Sansa's kill, and he knew that. So he let up, and he let Sansa have her day. So, and then, of course, you get the chills moment where the Winterfell flag, the Stark flag, drops on Winterfell, and you're like, finally, things are going back to the right. So I really love Battle of the Bastards for that. That was a really great episode. And I, like you guys have said, it set up the Winds of Winter perfectly. And I don't know how we're going to get that in Season 7 with only 7 episodes. I don't see – I mean, we've seen the filming leaks. We've seen the filming – you know, we've seen reports and photos. And it looks like they're setting up to be big battles. So let's move off of Season 6. We've all talked about our favorite characters, our favorite scenes, and all and favorite episodes. Dan – you have your hand or fingers on the pulse of news and
gross.
For season 7. And I want to ask you, I want to ask you, what excites you most about season 7 from all the filming things we've seen, the photos, the videos, and even if you want to talk about it, which I really don't care to, the leak, what excites you most?
I mean, my honest answer, I know it's kind of a cheat answer, is what I don't know excites me the most.
Mm.
That's always been the case.
That's actually a really good answer.
I mean, it's totally cheating because it's not something that's in the photos, but it's true. That's always been true of the show. I didn't see the door coming, and I loved it. I didn't see the septic explosion coming, and I loved it. I hope they deliver things that we don't see coming. And, you know, the leak, I don't want to talk about it either. All it could be true, some it could be true, some it's obviously true. But it's not complete, and there's no context.
Right.
So I am hoping that we see some things that have come, not out of left field, then like center left, and just surprise us.
Who do you want to see most in season? Who do you want to follow? Whose story do you want to follow most in season 7? If you had to pick, if you had to pick one character,
just one single character, Sansa. It is. I'm sorry. I want to see what she. And I know I'm apologizing. I mean, I do. I want to see what she does next. And just like what's involved with her sphere of influence right now. I feel like she's a character who's growing and is really kind of dynamic right now. A lot of the other ones are kind of set. Daenerys hasn't really changed since the end of season 1, to be honest. Jon Snow is, you know, kind of the dour, gloomy guy. Sansa is someone who's developing, and I want to see where that development takes her. I can see her dying by next season. I can see her becoming the new Queen of Winterfell by next season. I don't know which way it's going to go, and I want to see.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Isis, if you had to pick out of all the news that's come out of season 7 filming, what excites you the most?
Okay, well, of course, it's going to be Dany and Jon Snow meeting. Oh, I feel like there's a whole lot of meaty things that could happen there, you know, and I'm not going to, you know, talk about any spoilers or anything like that. But
oh, no, we warn people. You can talk about spoilers here. They well, know.
I think that, you know, there's a family, you know, thing going on, issue that they don't even know about, that they're actually, you know, related. I feel like that could come up. I feel like, you know, there may be, even as some people have said, that they would be open to a romance between John and Dany. But I feel like, you know, the war coming, that they have a lot that they need to either, you know, they're either going to join forces or they're going to be like, okay, no, we're going to split apart. So I feel like they have a lot of their storylines merging together is a good thing. And I'm actually really excited about seeing it. I think that it has a lot of potential, you know, to show us some really, really great things, and maybe elevate both of those actors, their acting, to, you know, another level.
So choose one character.
Oh, okay, well, now the person that I want to see is going to be Arya Stark.
Okay.
And it's not, I mean, yes, I want to know about Jon Snow and Dany, but I really, really want to know about Arya, and I'm going to tell you the reason why. Being that all the things that have happened to Arya, I feel like, to me, she is like a war veteran coming home, and or at least I'm assuming she's coming home. I hope she is. I hope she's going to Winterfell. And I am interested how she's going to play this. I am interested to find out, you know, is she going to have some sort of PTSD? You know, what changes are going to occur? Is her family going to, you know, I mean, of course, they all say, oh, yes, you know, please come home, please come home. But are they really ready to deal with the issues that Arya may have coming back to civilization? You know, she's been on her own for so long. She's having to fight for everything that she has, even the clothing on her back. And so I'm really, really interested in Arya Stark. I think that this story has been developing, and maybe it's because, you know, I'm a military veteran and I see something in her that I feel like it's relatable. And also I have hopes that her and the Hound are going to meet back up. So if that happens,
I think everybody wants that.
Yeah. If we can get them to meet back up and even, you know, do a little trifecta, an Arya, Bren, and Hound reunion, and they're the only three that know what happened on that damn mountain. And so
Isis, you heard it here, folks, first. Isis wants a three-way between Arya, the Hound, and Brienne. All right, we heard it here first.
Don't forget Podrick.
Podrick, the legend, Payne. I think I'm looking forward to most out of what I've seen from the leaks and all the spoilers and all the filming and all that. I want to see Drogon lay waste to the Lannister army. I want to see how that gets put together, if that is in fact what's going to happen. I want to see Mad Queen Daenerys decide to go, you know what? You kidnapped Yara. You killed some sand snakes. They were my peeps. So you know what? I'm going to go ahead and take my revenge, and I want to see her go full-on, fire-breathing, mad queen. Light them up, and I want to see it happen. And we've seen the pictures. We've seen what we think is going to happen. But that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. I want to see the dragons, you know, and because the other two, Viserion and Rhaegal, they've always been smaller than Drogon because they've been kept in captivity. I want to see if they've grown. And that makes me excited. And of course, obviously, I want to see what happens when Jon and the Hound and Thoros and whoever else goes north of the Wall to try to capture a White and bring it back. I want to see that. But the one character that I'm most excited for, and I can't believe nobody's mentioning, I want to see what happens to Sam in Old Town. What does he discover, man? Like, come on, guys. Sam could possibly be the savior of Westeros. He could possibly figure out how to cure Grayscale, how to stop the White Walkers, and how to make a really good chicken soup. You never know. There's a lot of books there in that library. And I always loved it. I always loved John Bradley on screen because he plays Sam exactly how I read him in the books. And I want to see what happens with him and Gilly there in Old Town. So that's who I'm most interested in following. Obviously, I want to see all the characters and what they're going to do. But we didn't get enough of Sam in season 6, did we? I mean, I don't think we did.
Just that moment when he went home.
And he went home, and stole the sword, then he went to Old Town, and that was it.
But I like the fact that he stood up to his dad. I mean, you know, there were some daddy issues there, and that I felt like, you know, in the end, he got, you know, the last word in his own way.
Right, right.
And now he is the first person we know who's going to college in Westeros. What frat will he pledge? Will his 50Q final be hard? Look at that stuff.
That would be awesome. Animal House, Westeros.
Old Town.
So this has been our year-end review for Game of Thrones. We've talked about it all, I think, unless either any of you have something else you want to bring up before we bring this podcast to a close. Dan, are you happy with the way things have ended? Are you glad that we got such a good season 6, and are you looking forward to season 7?
I hate that season 6 was so good. It's really annoying.
Is it scary? Is it scary that it was so good?
No, it wasn't scary. Of course I'm happy. Yeah, it was a good year. I think it's a good year for Game of Thrones. Looking forward to what happens next. One quick thing I'll mention just really, really fast. Spoilers. Sam and Gilly are alive. We have them filming stuff, so that's good.
Woohoo!
And there's snow in King's Landing now. So that's
winter has come. Happened. Winter has come to King's Landing. Okay, so I don't know. I think we can call this a good podcast. So for myself, for Dan Selke, thanks for joining us again. For Isis and for Corey Thone, thanks for joining us for this last podcast of 2016. We will be back in the first weeks of 2017. Listen, if you have any questions about the podcast, leave them in the comment section. If you have a topic you want us to talk about when we come back from our holiday break, let us know there as well. So thanks for listening. Valar Morghulis.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.